We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 260. Scott, the Yankees swept the Canadian baseball team. We celebrated 98. It was a good weekend overall.
It was a very good weekend overall. There were less Blue Jay fans in the stadium this time than last year, or 2 years ago even. Was it the Blue Jays that we played in the 96 celebration
no,
as well?
I believe that was Tampa. Because
I know we had it during one of our Bronx Pinstripes writers outings. I think I'm confusing one of the games, because I know one of those games was a Blue Jays game, and there were like, you know, this was 2 years ago, and there were
three, I think. I think that was 2015.
3 years ago?
That was the first year I think the Blue Jays were decent. And didn't the Blue Jays win the division in 2015 after the Yankees were leading the division for much of the season? The Yankees fell off in 2015 in the second half. That's when they lost to the Astros. And that was when all of the Blue Jays fans came out of the woodwork. Brand new hats, brand new crisp jerseys. Never seen them before.
White, so white. The jerseys were so white. There was not one stain on them. They almost had the creases on them from like the packaging.
No mustard stains. No nothing.
Yeah. So there was a lot less of that this year, which I thought was very interesting. So I think they've gone back into hibernation, and the Blue Jays all the gear has been put away. So, but yeah, it was a lot of fun. The offense shows up. It's, you know, when we have these events, it's when the offense shows up, it's just that much more fun because you have a bunch of people there hanging out and cheering for the team when there's home runs. And Andujar almost gave us a nice little prize and hit one right at us. So that was pretty cool. It was a lot
of fun. About five rows short. We were in the first couple rows of the left field upper or second deck. Andujar's home run went right before that. But
yep.
It was a good day. It was hot as hell. So we're two for two now on just dreadfully hot days for these reunion games. Next year is going to be interesting. It's going to be the 20th anniversary of the 99 team. I'm assuming they're going to do the same sort of thing, right?
Or it's the 10-year anniversary also for the 09 team. So do we parade out two squads? What happens here?
Interesting.
Does A-Rod get celebrated in the stadium for 09? I mean, there's a bunch of... It's going to be interesting to see what they do, because... they'll have to probably do it on two separate days.
Well, would you? What do you care more about? Celebrating the 99 team, which is essentially most of the players that we already have celebrated 96 and 98, and then we're going to celebrate again for 2000.
Right.
Or do you want to see those 09 guys come back for a 10-year reunion? I mean, some of them are still playing.
Some of them are definitely still playing.
Some of them are still on the team. Gardner, yeah. David Robertson, Sabathia. I mean, all three of those guys, in theory, could be off the team next year.
Yeah, so I guess 09 would be more fresh, like, because we've seen a lot of the guys in 99, but it's an embarrassment of riches in the late 90s, so these guys just keep coming back and strolling in on these golf carts. For the guys that are lesser known are the ones that are really looking forward to it now, I think.
Because, well, they've got nothing
like,
else.
Hey. Yeah, and they're like, I was on this team for 1 year. You know, this is beautiful. Let's go back.
David Cohn yesterday was feeling the effects of the 98 party, I guess, on Saturday night. He was pretty hungover in the booth. I'm not sure he can take another one next year.
Well, as long as Boomer Wells doesn't come into town, I think he'll be okay.
Oh, yeah. I think we have a little bit of a hazing situation with Boomer Wells and David Cohn, where Wells comes in and just totally wrecks Cohn for a weekend.
Well, this is what I see. This is how I see these guys. First of all, they need to write a book about their escapades, because that would be the best baseball book, and it would probably have not much to do about baseball. But the way I see it is like, when you go and you're hanging out with your buddies from college, there's only one way you know how to hang out with those guys. And you start drinking and then things just get out of hand, because that's how you know them. That's how you hung out with them when you were friends with them in school. I think it's kind of a similar way. I think these two were up to a lot of adventures in the city and just hung out quite a bit. You know, they're good friends. They always talk about it. I don't think they know how to act around each other any other way.
So two grown men who were professional athletes in the late 90s, who were on the greatest team to ever play baseball and to win a championship. These guys don't know how to hang out with each other than boozing their ass off.
Yes, that's correct. Especially because Boomer Wells is you know, going around and promoting this new whiskey, Screwball Whiskey. He's been promoting it everywhere. So I don't know, you know, how much of a stake he has in this thing, but that's he's been all over the place. I mean, social media, they're lining up shots of whiskey, the two of them. I don't know if that was the night before or two nights before, but I mean, they were going out, and they did a funny thing on the 98 celebration on the golf carts. Like, they both acted like they were, you know, like dying. They threw their arms back and like acted like they were going to like pass out on the golf cart. I thought it was pretty funny.
Well, you could tell me that this Screwball Whiskey company only is paying Wells in shots, and I would believe that he would sponsor them because he's just getting free booze.
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, that would be par for the course, I think. So, yeah, it's just funny. They really do need to write a book, though, because these guys, I think they're hilarious together. They're, and just when they get together, I'm sure it's nothing but fire.
I don't know if you could corral those two minds to write a book. What I think you need to do is you just need to trap them in a room for like 8 hours, press record on a tape recorder or on a podcast, and just see what happens.
I'm not saying that they need to write the book. I'm saying that they need to go in that exact room.
They can't get their thoughts together.
No. Yes, they can. You just give them another bottle of whiskey, put them in that room, and then put a writer in there as well, and just make sure you do record everything, and then somebody else ghostwrite the thing, and then they'll just sign off on it. That's it. Maybe they don't even sign off on it. Get them to sign it while they're drinking. because that way the book will be really good.
So what did you think of the actual celebration itself?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was cool to see the guys there, but when we're comparing the 96 celebration to what they did in this past weekend, I thought it was a little bit less. I didn't think it was as, and maybe that's just because, you know, I saw the 96 one, and it is a lot of the same guys, but it's also a lot of new guys, too. But the way that they did the golf cart thing, I didn't really like. I'm pretty sure, if I remember correctly, in the 96 one, they had them come out from like center field, and they did kind of like a little bit more of a focus on the player itself. And then you saw them what they went to their position. Right. And it was, I don't know, it was a little bit more of a show, I think. And I think it was a little bit better.
Well, what I think maybe what happened after that 96 one is some of the players were like, I'm not doing that again. It was 110 degrees. I'm not standing out there in the beating sun. My body cannot take this anymore.
Well, and then, you know, going all the way from center field to your position, I mean, legitimately on that day, they were probably sweating through the whatever they had underneath the jersey and then into the jersey, because it was freaking hot. Yeah. And then yesterday on Saturday, it was hot, but it wasn't as hot as the last one. It was, but yeah, I could absolutely see them saying, I'm not doing that again. Give me a golf cart and let's go.
I think what needs, if they do it again next year for 99, somebody needs to get on the mic and say something in the stadium, because we had the videos from Jeter and Scott Brosius. Both of those guys couldn't be there. Brosius, third base coach for the Mariners. Jeter, I guess he's busy with the last place Marlins, but somebody, like, give Boomer Wells the mic and just let him riff for a couple minutes in the stadium.
Yeah, see, the Yankees aren't giving Wells the mic, though. That's the thing. They need somebody safe.
Cone is at least responsible. Paul O'Neill, I mean, these guys are used to talking on TV. They can say something.
Right.
Because we hear John Sterling and Michael Kay all season, 100 times a year, 100 plus times a year. I don't need to hear them read a script again. I would much rather them do their shtick, do their thing, read all the stats, all that crap, and then let me hear one of the players talk for a couple minutes. Just tell one story from the 98 season. Because if you're there in the stadium, all you see is them waving on the golf carts. And that's it. I think actually on TV you get to see a little bit more, because you get the close-ups, you get to see the interactions down in the infield when they're all standing there. Like where we are in the outfield, you can't really see what's going on in the infield between those players. All you're looking at is numbers on the back.
No, that's true. And I'm sure the YES Network had like more additional clips as well for some of the guys. And I don't know, like, you know, exactly what they play. But you're right. I think in the stadium, they didn't really take into consideration as much the fan in the stadium for the event because of that. And you know, unless you're field level, you're seeing people on a golf cart. Like you can barely tell who they are. Right. I mean, you know what I mean? Like you're not, you can't see what they're doing. But yeah, so I think on TV, it was probably better. It's like watching football. Like to me, football is way better on TV than it is in person. And this was probably the same event.
And also, final thoughts from the celebration day. Where's Ricky Ledé?
Where's Joe Girardi?
Well, no, they could not track down Ricky Ledé.
Oh, they literally couldn't track him down.
Couldn't track him down. They invited him. They couldn't track him.
Oh, wow. He's ghosting the Yankees. That's a bold move.
He is MIA, Ricky Ledet.
Maybe we should get everybody in our audience that we should get a BP crew little investigation going here and find Ricky Ledet.
Yeah. I don't know, Ricky Ledet
was a big part. Everybody had a lot of hope for Ricky Ledet as a prospect coming up.
Yeah, rookie him and Shane Spencer, the rookie sensations.
Yeah. So we need to find him. Let's do that. I think everybody needs to get on this. Let's look for Ricky Ledet on the internet and find him.
It was a fun day overall, though. Great seeing everybody at the event, at the pregame party. Once again, the pregame got a little bit away from me. It happens every time. Maybe next time will be the one where I control myself, but that time will tell. But we are going to give away one of the 1998 t-shirts that we made, as we said last time. So why don't you read the review that won it?
All right, so again, if you won this, this is by Chef_Resnick, and it says, "What you wish your friends were like." Growing up in Westchester, I've known a lot of Yankee fans, but not many of them could talk baseball like these two. The show has made me a better fan from the sunniest to the grayest of days. It also turns out that my friends who are true fans listen to the podcast, so our conversations are pretty much offshoots of what the show is, and it makes me appreciate it even more. Keep up the good work, and go Yankees. So thanks, Resnick, Chef Resnick. I assume you're some sort of chef. Appreciate it. Shoot us an email info@BronxPinstripes, and I will make sure to get you the 98 t-shirt with Mo on the front of it. Thanks guys for your reviews and ratings. It does help us out quite a bit in iTunes and helps us get the show out to more Yankee fans, and that's kind of our goal. So if you have not taken a minute and just given us a 5-star rating and review, please do so. It really helps us out, and we truly do appreciate it.
And the final regular season BP crew event is going to be September 15th. That's a Saturday, also against the Blue Jays. And that's a good thing if you want to see the Yankees win, because the Yankees have dominated the Blue Jays all season. But it's $64. You get a t-shirt. Pre-game party currently is scheduled for 2:00 at the dugout. I say currently because that game is a flex game. It's most likely not going to mean much. The Blue Jays suck, and the Yankees hopefully will have something wrapped up by mid to late September. So that could be moved up to a 1:00 game, or it could be a 4:00 game. Either way, we're going to be pregaming in the Bronx. So go get your tickets now. They are on sale. All right.
Didn't you just pay attention to what happened yesterday? The Yankees got back into single digits, so that means that game will mean something.
Right, because it's 9.5.
Yeah. But they're starting the run. And Chris Sale going on the DL, things are starting to happen in a bad way in Boston. It's gonna be like a domino effect.
We do have a mailbag question about that, so that's a good tease for that. But as I said, Yankees are 12-4 against the Blue Jays this season, and they've outscored them 90-55. So what is it about the Blue Jays that the Yankees can just totally dominate them that they cannot do against teams like Baltimore, Tampa, and some of these other crappy teams we've seen them not play so well against?
Yeah, I mean, I think the pitching in Toronto right now is just abysmal.
And the pitching in Baltimore is just lights out.
The pitching, I mean, there's no doubt the pitching in Baltimore is not good either, but they score more runs. And I don't know, Toronto just seems like they've, besides that Justin Smoke game, which is really the one that stands out to me, that's really the one that aggravates me the most. It seems like they have their number for whatever reason. But the pitching's been terrible in Toronto this year, and that was one of the things that they were looking at, I think, for maybe being sneaky good with Stroman and Sanchez, you thought, and Happ, you know, who has a potential shot at winning 20 games at this point. He's got 14 wins right now. So, you know, you look at what the names on their rotation, you thought that they were going to be good. And we've talked about this. Arden Zwelling, who was the beat reporter for the Blue Jays, who came on the show early in the season as we were doing a preview, kind of talked us into them being almost players or potential, like, you know, spoilers in the AL East. So I think on paper before they had a team, but for whatever reason, it just has not worked out. I know they've had a ton of injuries. So Yankees have just had their number. I think it's just as simple as that.
Yeah, and as you said, the Yankees now are in striking distance, 9.5 games behind Boston. I say that sarcastically because I do not think they're in striking distance. But Boston has some worries with the sale stuff. So I guess if the Yankees play lights out over the next month, they could make those games towards the end of September interesting. But what I'm really looking at is that the Yankees now have a 4-game lead over Oakland and 7.5 game lead over Seattle. Those 6 games when they go west are still going to be super important just to see how they play against those teams, because they're going to either play, I think, Oakland or Houston in the wild card game. We know how they've played already against Houston, but that was back in May. When you don't see a team from May all the way to October, it's just a totally different animal. It's a totally different thing. And Houston has their own problems of their own right now. They've struggled in August, kind of like the Yankees. Verlander is not the same guy he was when he was, you know, Cy Young favorite in the first couple months of the season. But I think with Oakland playing the way they are, I mean, I think it's a real question. Would you rather see Oakland or Houston in a 1-game wild card?
I mean, I hate pointing at a team and saying I want to see them, because it's just like a recipe for disaster, because it never works out that way. You know, some Oakland is the team that they both worry me for different reasons. Obviously, Houston, the talent is there. I think it's far superior, and they have, you know, very, very deep starting pitching. When you're looking at Oakland, they got nothing to lose. Like, these guys are playing with house money at this point. They are a young team and just playing kind of out of their minds right now. So I feel like that's, right now, the way it stands, the more dangerous and hungry team. Whereas you have Houston coming off of a World Series, and there aren't very many teams that can, fight back from a World Series and get back there. That just doesn't happen very often. So you see the kind of wild card. I mean, because they literally are a wild card. Oakland A's, and they kind of worry me, because they got nothing to lose. And when you have a team with nothing to lose, like, that's a dangerous team.
Yeah, and I also think it really depends on how the Yankees are playing when that time rolls around. Because if they're playing like they are now, I don't care who they play, whether it's Oakland, Houston, Seattle, Tampa, like, it doesn't matter. They do not look good in many facets of the game, and that's going to worry me, especially in a 1-game wild card. But if we're talking in late September, Severino has kind of found his groove again and the offense is healthy, then I mean, I guess I'd rather see Oakland just because of the talent like that Houston has. But I'm confident if the Yankees can click again, they can beat anybody.
No, they absolutely can beat anybody. But yeah, Oakland doesn't have the starting pitching. I mean, they're literally running guys out there that used to be Oakland A's. Now they're back to Oakland A's. Trevor Cahill and Brett Anderson. Like, these guys are back now on the Oakland squad for whatever reason, have kind of had a resurgence. And I'm sure, you know, the youth and the fact that they're winning does help that. We saw that, I think, in 2016, when all the young guys came up and they had that kind of late run, that late push. When the young guys were up there and playing well, you saw some of the veterans start playing a little bit better. But so that can definitely have an effect on players. But again, man, you know, like, when you're talking about one game, it's really tough to say I want this team over that team, especially if Verlander's not the same guy. But the thing is with Houston is that they have so many they go so deep in their starting rotation that they could throw out two guys at you in a wild card and you know, just empty the canister if they wanted to. To try to beat you. So plus, I have bad memories of Houston coming to Yankee Stadium and winning the game in a wild card.
Right, but that's the thing about the wild card game is that, yeah, you figure out everything on paper, and then, like what happened last season, you throw it out 2 outs into the game because your starting pitcher is struggling, and it's a 1-game do or die. So
right.
who the hell knows? But before we get to Severino, who we hope is going to be pitching in that wild card game if the Yankees play it, I want to tell you guys about Sleep Number. Maybe you've considered a Sleep Number bed but thought you couldn't afford one, but can you really afford another restless night's sleep? There's never been a better time to come to a Sleep Number store, where all beds are on sale during the biggest sale of the year. The Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed lets you choose the comfort and support that's right for you. It adjusts on each side, so it's the perfect bed for couples. You can actually feel how it contours to your neck, shoulders, back, and hips for more proper spinal alignment. And the new Sleep Number 360 smart beds are effortlessly comfortable. They sense your every move and automatically adjust to keep you sleeping blissfully throughout the night. Does your bed do that? Scott, I bet it does not. Unless you have a Sleep Number, then it probably does. Come in during the biggest sale of the year where all beds are on sale, plus save 50% on the new Sleep Number 360 limited edition smart bed now through Labor Day. You'll only find Sleep Number at any of the 550 Sleep Number stores nationwide. There are more than 550 stores nationwide. Just visit sleepnumber.com/Bronx to find the store nearest you. We saw Severino pitch on Saturday. He had had 7 bad starts in a row. We spent half the episode, last episode, talking about trying to figure out what was wrong with him. Dove into some metrics on his fastball, not getting swings and misses. Is it mechanical? Is he tipping pitches? So Severino, all eyes were on Severino on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, and I think he definitely, we saw the better Severino. I think we saw a guy that was in control early, that looked like he had good stuff. I mean, the first 2 pitches I noticed were 97 miles per hour. He came out firing. And you know, I thought he looked good. The first inning was good, and I think that's what he needed. He needed a good first inning to kind of try to get into his groove and to get some confidence. And, you know, there were a lot of positives from what we could see. And you look at the final line and you see the strikeouts there. Obviously, you see him not going deep into the game, and the pitch count got up. And but you know, the strikeouts were there, so you're obviously going to have a higher pitch count. The problem I see still, and I don't know if it's necessarily a problem, but him just working through things, is that, you know, he's not closing an at bat out when he can. He's mm-hmm. still throwing a couple more pitches than he needs to, or than he used than you know that we're used to seeing early in the season. So I think that's kind of the next thing, is, you know, that confidence will come. He'll I think get a little bit more aggressive with 2 strikes, and we'll start to see that pitch count get lower.
Yeah, that's the put away. You know, his ability to put hitters away was unreal in the first half of the season.
Yep,
and he struggled with that, and that's not just fastball. Swings and miss on the fastball. That's also swings and miss on his slider, especially. That's his put-away pitch. And his utilization of the changeup, which he did throw 13 times on Saturday, which is slightly more than he normally throws it. He had a big at-bat to Smoke early in the game where he threw back-to-back changeups, which I think is huge for him just from a confidence standpoint and a showing it standpoint. We always say that, you know, even if his changeup isn't his best pitch, he still needs to throw it and still need to prove to hitters he will throw it in a big spot. So if you put that into the players' minds, the next guys that go up there after Smoke say, okay, I got to respect that changeup too.
Yeah, you got to respect 3 pitches in that. And I think that plays off, like, one of the big stats that you were looking at last week, and that, you know, I think you were kind of seeing as an indicator of how he's going. And I agree, I think it is an indicator, but I think there's so many things that play into the percentage itself, and that's the whiff percentage on the fastball. They, you know, when we saw the changeup early in the game on Saturday, and the fact that he did throw that back-to-back to Smoke, like, you know damn well Smoke was not expecting 2 changeups, and there was some good separation in miles per hour on those changeups. I want to say it was mid-80s on that changeup, maybe like 86, but I remember noticing how the difference was when I was sitting in the stands. And when you see that separation and you're throwing it for strikes, like, that's nasty. And you're throwing it 13 changeups in 5 innings. I mean, yeah, it's 100 pitches, but 13 changeups in 5 innings, that's a lot of changeups to throw. And he started throwing them early, which I thought was important because he showed it early. So these guys had to respect it, you know, even after that Smoke at bat. You know, after he threw those 2, they had to respect it. So I thought it was a good start, and I'm glad he used those pitches.
Yeah, and small sample, just 1 start, but he was back to getting 21% whiffs per swing on his fastball, which is what he was in April and May. June was off the charts at 27, but 21% is much more of the Severino we're used to seeing than the 13% he was getting in July and August. So I know it's only 1 start. It's only 100 pitches, but it's encouraging.
Yeah, but we've seen a couple of these starts sprinkled in with, you know, like a bad one too. So there's absolutely, you know, a life there. Like, he's showing the guy that he was in flashes. And that's why I think that's why I've always just said that this is a mechanical thing, because when you can come in and out of it, you know, it's like you're repeating what you're supposed to do in certain cases and then not doing it in other cases. And that's when you kind of go off the rails. But the fact that he's throwing that changeup again early on is just showing me that you know, that was absolutely part of the game plan, showing the changeup early so that he can get more swings and misses on that fastball too. Because if you're throwing a changeup, you know, 13 times in 100 pitches, that fastball, you know, at 97, 98 miles an hour is going to feel like 103. because you have to respect both. And the guys just aren't going to be able to catch up to it. And you know, I think when he starts locating a little bit better and spotting that fastball better, you know, then we're going to start seeing more swings and misses, and we'll see the pitch count get lower because he's going to be putting guys away, you know, at a faster click than he did on Saturday.
That's the next step we need to see him take, is lower the pitch count, get deeper into the games, because he is the starter of the five that the Yankees need to rely on to give them 7 innings. Every starter can't go out there and just give them four to five innings, which is what happened over the weekend. I know they won all of the games, but Lance Lynn couldn't get out of the fifth inning. Severino could not get out of the – he went five plus innings, couldn't get out of the sixth inning. And then the same thing for Happ, couldn't get out of the sixth inning. So it puts so much strain on your bullpen.
Yeah, well, I agree with that. The strain got lessened a little bit with the luck, you know, on Friday night with the rain. This is the first time we actually had some luck with rain, getting that win with the rain shortened game, and it came at a really good time because Lynn did get in trouble early. So, you know, I thank the rain gods for that one. It's about time you gave it back to us for something good. But yeah, you know, that's, you want to see him get deeper, but again, and you know, Toronto's they still can hit the ball. They'll score runs on you. They have, you know, a relatively good offense. So it's not like they went out there, and he did this against, just a completely stagnant offense. I think that, you know, it was a good test, and he definitely showed some of the good stuff. And I'd say better, more of the good than the bad, which is, definitely a positive note.
Next start against Baltimore next weekend.
Yeah, and again, they've been putting up a ton of runs too. Even though they're not the same team, they have been putting up runs on some good teams. I don't know how to explain that, but they are.
Well, now that Manny Machado, the clubhouse cancer, is off the team,
it's true. Yeah, he's just killing teams in Los Angeles. Good thing we have the best the best third baseman in the game right now.
Best offensive third baseman.
That's true. Yes, he's very good at offense.
Thursday's loss to the Rays. So the Yankees, before they swept the Blue Jays, dropped a series to Tampa, another series to Tampa. Thursday's game put it up there on the list, top five worst losses of the season, because they load the bases in the ninth inning. They're down two runs, load the bases with no outs. You get Greg Bird, Gardner, and Romine up there. You have them on the ropes. They go back to the bullpen. Romo was in. He couldn't get it out, couldn't get out of the ninth. They go to the bullpen. First pitch to Greg Bird, pop up. And right then and there, I'm like, this inning is going down the toilet.
The you know, first pitch at bat, there were a lot of people killing Bird for the swinging at the first pitch. And when you have the bases loaded like that, you know, the chances are the pitcher's going to try to get ahead of you, especially when you're a guy that's struggling. So, you know, I'm not killing him as much for not taking that pitch, because I think when you have a guy like Bird who's trying to get going, he needs good pitches to hit, right? And if you know that there's a good pitch coming at you, or there's a high percentage that there's a good pitch coming at you right now, and it's probably going to be a fastball, I don't really have a big problem with him swinging at that pitch. The execution was terrible. It was absolutely bad. When you are swinging at a first pitch with the bases loaded with a guy, you better damn well make some good contact. You better hit that ball. And you know, with the crappy contact and the little foul out, it was a bad look, and then made a lot of people question the decision. You know, if he squares up that ball, obviously nobody's saying a damn word. But so I don't have a huge problem with the first pitch swinging. That being said, like, you got to execute on that play.
Well, it's one of those catch 22 situations where Greg Bird is struggling. So do you want him to go up there and be aggressive and just get a pitch to hit and put a good swing on it? Or do you want him to read the situation and say, this guy is in a ton of pressure, this is the first pitch he's throwing with the bases loaded, make him come to me, make him throw me my pitch? So yeah, it's like, what do you want to do here? And Bird chose to swing. He chose to be the aggressor. It didn't work out. The thing I had the bigger problem with was his post-game comments, where he's just kind of very casual, saying, I'm happy to be here. This is the most games I've played all season. You know, I'm going to have 5,000 or 6,000 more chances at this thing. So, yeah, I popped up today, but I'll get them the next time, kind of thing. Whether that's how he really feels internally or not, which is a whole other issue, you don't friggin' say that after you just popped up with the bases loaded with the game on the line.
Yeah, we were joking about this on Saturday. It's like some of the guys did go to the and were paying attention and taking notes when they when the Jeter Media School was in session, and everybody when these guys were coming up and they have to go through all this media training and things like that that the Yankees tell them. Like Judge listened. That's Gleyber Torres. He listened, and then he learned English also. So he took it to the next level. He's the kid.
Greg Bird knows English.
He's the kid. Yeah. Torres is the kid who's raising his hand with like a minute left in class, asking another question. You're like, stop, please stop raising your hand for questions.
You're already getting an A plus. Shut up.
Yeah. Now you're going to learn a different language. Thank you for making us all look bad. And then you get Greg Bird in there, who's this Colorado kid, real, you know, a lot more laid back and just like, you know, I'm just happy to be here, man. And like, I'm going to go see Fish next week. Like this is everything's going well.
Colorado people hating you. Like I got Seattle people hating me.
Hey man, I got some buddies that live in Boulder, and my brother now lives in Denver. So it's definitely a huge music scene. My brother has not gone to more concerts in his lifetime than he has in like a year and a half living in the last year and a half in Denver. So yeah, these guys love their live music, which is fine. But yeah, it's definitely his personality because we've seen that, and it's not. It's very different than when Sonny Gray coming off the mound smiling. Sonny Gray's a newer guy to the Yankees, obviously, who was super highly touted. Greg Bird, I think expectations have definitely gone down a lot for Yankee fans because of the injuries, and I just don't know if people believe it anymore. So you don't want to see that, but at the same time, it's also his personality to laugh things off. Like he's always been that joking guy, you know. In every time I've heard him talk, he's joking about something.
Yeah, but for him to say I'm going to have 5,000 or 6,000 more chances at
it's a bad. No, you don't say that at that point. But it doesn't necessarily surprise me.
Right, but even like, what are the chances he has 5,000 more at bats with the Yankees?
I mean, it was an exaggeration. But the thing is, you know, again, expectations are huge. I don't know. I've said this probably 1,000 times. When you have an expectation about somebody, the way that they're going to act or the way that they're going to do something, and then they don't meet that expectation, you get disappointed. And I think a lot of people are already in that disappointment phase for Greg Bird. So when he comes out and does something like this, it's like, okay, it's almost like chalking. And I know a lot of people were upset with the way he talked. I just chalked it up to that's just his personality and, that's it.
Right, and he's like, this is the most games I've ever played in a season, which is a whole other issue with Greg Bird. But for him to, what does he think he's going to get a gold medal, gold star, just for going out there and playing? Like, right. That's not how this works. Just that's baseline. You are paid to go out there and play and perform, not just to go out there.
Right. Yeah. No. I think the expectations when talking to the media should be a little bit higher on his on the personal side, just so that there's not that gray area of gray area of like what you want and how you feel about things. That's bad. I just realized that. Damn, Sonny. You can't catch a break, kid.
Do you think Boone goes up to Bird after the game, after seeing those comments, and be like, all right, listen, this is what you do. This is what you say. This is what you don't say. Let's play the tape back. You know how they watch an at-bat back? This is where it went wrong. This is where you swung at that slider in the dirt.
Right.
This is where you screwed up, kid.
This is where they point out the Greg Bird post-game interview, and then they go to the videotape of the Aaron Judge, where he literally closes his eyes, pauses for like 7 seconds, and then gives a response.
Puts everybody to sleep.
He just lulls you to sleep. He gives you the most boring answers you could possibly think of. And Jeter is sitting back with his legs up, smiling at this kid, because that's exactly what he used to do. We've talked about the mannerisms after, like in the postgame conferences and interviews of Jeter and Judge being so weirdly similar, because they really are. It's like they did go to the exact same school, but no, Bird didn't listen. And that's fine. Cause you know what? We've also said the same thing about Frazier, right? Like we want more personality on these teams, and Bird is certainly that. He's definitely that like jovial, funny guy in the clubhouse. Like, he's got that personality. So, you got to take it the good with the bad, I guess.
Jovial only works when you're producing. And
that's true.
Hey, maybe the solo home run late in the game on Saturday that we joked did not mean shit got him going, because he hit the grand slam in his first at bat on Sunday. So maybe Greg Bird's turning a corner.
You know, I think he did hit. We talked about Sonny Gray trying to hitting rock bottom and then bouncing up when Greg Bird was struggling as badly as he did. And then, you'd think that he'd have some confidence on Friday night getting that walk. It was a big walk in front of Neil Walker, and just, you know, he grinded out an at-bat. It was a good at-bat. The guys on the broadcast were giving him credit, and then Walker goes up and hits that big home run. And when he crosses the plate, Bird's ready to, he's like, man, I'm so excited. I'm ready to go. Like, I'm pumped up. Tries to give Neil Walker a high five and completely gets dissed. Just completely left him hanging. He continues the high five into the air and then runs off to the side, and Neil Walker goes and celebrates. It was a bad look. It was a bad, the confidence could not have been there for Greg Bird after missing as badly as he has on the field at the plate and then completely getting shut down by Neil Walker, none less.
Whiffing at the plate, whiffing on his high five.
Whiffing with the high five. It was a bad high five. If you have not seen this high five, go to any of one of our social medias, and I posted a little clip of it with some Bruno Mars in there too.
So the rain assisted win on Friday was actually a good thing because Lance Lynn struggled in the first, gave up four runs. He could not get through the fifth inning. But if you think about it, because it was only a 7-inning game, technically that's like a 7-inning start for the Yankees. So I'm looking glass half full here. Lance Lynn went 7 strong for the Yankees on Friday.
Yeah, comparable 7 strong with an asterisk. But I think the biggest thing that we see out of Lance Lynn is the competitiveness after he shows up and throws a ton of balls. He walked, what, 3 guys in the first inning? And then comes back and fights. And that's what I love to see. We've seen so many of these guys that have come in and just given up leads. Like, I mean, Domingo Herman would give up the leads. And yeah, he'd fight back for a couple innings, but then it seems like they would get to him again. We've seen Sonny Gray just blow up in the beginnings and then never come back because he doesn't have a fighting bone in his body right now. But Lance Lynn, who is, you know, the giant marshmallow man, the Stay Puff marshmallow man.
6'5", 280.
Yeah, Diesel. I feel like I need a Dan Patrick ding after that. But, you know, he came back and fought. And good for him. He threw right around 100 pitches and got deeper into the game. And the team needed him because he could have absolutely, you know, given up. Not so much given up, but just, you know, folded and given up a couple more runs. And then, you know, Boone was going to go to the bullpen if he didn't rebound. But he did rebound. I think if the ball bounces a couple ways, some of those walks don't score in the first inning, but they did, and he did walk them, so he got himself into trouble. But, you know, I give him credit because he did bounce back and fight back and at least give the Yankees an opportunity to get back in the game.
Lance Lynn looks like he smells like hot dogs. Just sweating hot dogs at all times.
Sweating meat.
Yes, but I don't know. I can only give him so much credit.
Meat. For 280, 6'5", you love your meat.
The first inning was rough, 4 runs. It could have been better because it was a play when only one run was in at the time. Gardner throws behind a runner. It was a one-hop throw to second. Gleyber does not handle the throw. They would have had the runner out. That would have been the second out with only one run in, and the next guy struck out. And I know you can't just assume what follows would have followed, but this could have been a better inning for Lance Lynn. It wasn't. I'm not totally excusing him. That was not an egregious error by Gleyber. But it's a play that you want to see him make. He didn't make it.
Don't walk 3 guys. That's the bottom line. Yeah, don't walk three guys. You put yourself in that situation.
But I think really the offense came back. They came back from 4 runs down. They had a lot of big hits. Neil Walker, 3-run shot, as you said. But I think the underrated star of this game was Chad Green coming in and pitching 2 lights-out innings. He only threw 18 pitches to get through 2 innings. That was the best Chad Green has looked in a long time.
Yeah, and that's huge because we need Chad Green to be Chad Green. We need Chad Green to be the guy of 2017. I think, you know, when we're looking at this, we've seen some greatness out of this bullpen this year, but we've also seen some stagnation and definitely, I'd say, a decline from what we saw last year individually from these guys, certainly from Tommy Canley, who's just disappeared into oblivion. And then finally gets another opportunity on Saturday and looked not good. But Chad Green coming back, I think, is a very big thing for the Yankees in that bullpen because of what the rotation is. And yes, they've, you know, with Lynn and Hap coming in, they've definitely stabilized it. But, you know, if they're going to go deep, one, a healthy Severino, a right Severino, and then they need a dominant bullpen because it gives them so many options if they were to get into any kind of trouble, you know, early into a postseason game. But Chad Green going 2 innings is definitely huge. So, yeah, that was a big spot for him.
Yeah, those bridge innings, which we thought the Yankees bullpen was going to be able to lock down no problem, the fifth, sixth, and seventh innings has been a struggle for them in the second half of the season. And it's a bigger reason as any why this team has struggled. And now you can say, well, if the starting rotation didn't make them pitch in those innings every single night, maybe they would be better. And I agree with you. But what we saw in the first half is when Severino wasn't pitching because he was the only one going deep in games, they were able to lock down the fifth and sixth innings with Holder, Green, Robertson, et cetera, in the first half.
Yeah, I mean, and look at what's happening lately, too, is that, you know, we're not seeing the Domingo Germán and Sonny Gray, like, 2 to 3 inning blowups and the bullpen having to come in and throwing 7-8 innings.
Demoralizing starts.
Yeah, we just haven't seen that in a while. So the innings are definitely getting cut down, even if these guys are going into the sixth inning or you know, going five, which I'm not going to say is a good start. Like I want my starters to go at least six innings. Like that's kind of one of those demands I would put on my starters. Like six innings, this is what I need from you. That's
well, it depends on the starter
plus.
Because if Sabathia goes
it's
out
not
there,
CC does not count in what.
Okay,
I'm
but
about.
Sabathia or Lance Lynn goes out there and gives you five innings and only a couple runs, and you're either tied or run up, run down. You kind of just take that and say thanks. But when it's Hap and it's Tanaka and it's Severino, those three guys right now need to be giving them more than five innings.
No, I agree with that. But, I mean, when you're walking into the start, you need your guys to have the mindset of six innings plus. Six innings plus. I need
sure.
six innings.
Mindset and
Well, I mean, Lance Lynn's done it except for this one time, and I think that it's because
but
he
no
got
one,
into trouble
Lance
early.
Lynn was brought in here to be an insurance policy, which they had to cash in a week later. Because
yeah, but now he's our stopper. Now he's the
savior.
Now
he's not the stopper anymore.
Now he's Justin Verlander of 2017. Like this is the guy.
Maybe we call him the bouncer.
The bouncer. I like that. The stopper and the bouncer. Could you imagine trying to get into a bar with CeCe and Lance Lynn guarding the door? You're not getting in that door, bro.
No,
not getting in the door. You got to go low. You definitely got to go low.
Who wants to go in a bar that smells like hot dogs?
A lot of most bars do smell like sweat, anyway. Meat sweat.
Why haven't the Yankees picked up an outfielder? This is a question that I cannot figure out that every Yankees fan is asking when they see Shane Robinson and his 120 batting average playing right field again. I know Neil Walker was out there on Saturday, but
he's been out there a lot, though.
Neil Walker's
been out there.
Neil Walker hit the 3-run homer on Friday. He gives you something offensively great. But we also saw that he's an infielder playing the outfield because that ball he misplayed on Saturday in that 5-run sixth inning for the Blue Jays could have been a huge point in that game. He comes in and he can't get in front of a line drive. It goes past him and all three runners score. They're playing a second baseman / third baseman in right field, and it's showing. And their other option is Sugar Shane Robinson, who I don't even think belongs in AAA. Like, put him in Staten Island. Like, that is where he belongs. That's the type of hitter he is.
What are they now, the Pizza Rats? Are they the Staten Island Pizza? Yeah, I think they rebranded. I remember there was a competition to pick the new logo for the Staten Island Yankees, and I think they went with Pizza Rats. I think that's it.
See, that is a viral sensation gone wrong.
And there's literally a slice of pizza with a rat as their logo, and I'll give them credit on this. The branding for the box, beautiful. It's a pizza box as the box for the hat. So that's a nice touch. I do like that.
Is
I like where they're going with it.
Is it better than the Tampa Tarpoons, which you
the
can
that definitely
can
doesn't look like
missay very easily into something else?
It's not Tarpoons though. It's Tarpons, and it looks like. Yes, it looks like something else. It looks like a feminine product is what it looks like when you look at the logo. Take a quick look at that logo and tell me you see tarpons. Nobody sees tarpons.
Is it really tarpons?
Yeah, yeah. Right. Oh, yeah, that's it. And I got some people closer to the team that definitely see the same thing I see. but the pizza rats are doing it. So anyway, yes, Sugar Shane Robinson does not belong in this team. I was wondering why the Little League was running on Saturday. Because when you see him from the stands out in the field, you're like, what's happening? Right. Is the bat boy running? Like, what's going on here? I thought the kids run the bases after the game. So,
well,
you know, this is so why did they not get a right fielder yet? I think he's weighing opportunities. And I'm just assuming that the right opportunity has not come up. And you know what? To Neil Walker's credit, he has played a good right field besides that play. And the ball bounces differently in the outfield. It skips more than bounces. You know, he's going to get more of a Sunday bounce, I think, on the infield rather than the infield or the outfield will get more of a skip. And that's what happened to him. Went under his glove and it was a bad look.
Maybe Cashman's still trying to track down Ricky Ledé for right field.
Hey man, you could try to rebuild or get that that sensation back into the stadium late in the season. Good things can happen.
But we're not talking about replacing Neil Walker on the roster. He's still going to be there, still going to be right. Playing. But Shane Robinson, like we said, does not belong on the roster. You could pick up Granderson, Danny Valencia, even Adam Jones cleared through waivers. You probably maybe don't want to pick up Jones because of his salary. But what is Curtis Granderson? Curtis Granderson has like $1 million left on his contract. Yeah. You're telling me Curtis Granderson can't give them more than Shane Robinson?
So I think one of the bigger things for me is what I don't understand is we've seen Tyler Wade play the outfield. They had him in center field quite a bit. And he's probably one of the best athletes in the organization. Like the kid can run. You could tell he's one of the best. People are touting him as the best shortstop defensively in the system. Maybe not next to Didi, but you know, other than Didi in the system, he's got a great glove. Why are they not trotting Tyler Wade out there as that utility guy that could play right field? I guarantee he could play right field. I'm getting better at bats from Tyler Wade. It's at least a guy I want to see. He's faster. He can run the bases better. I don't know why we're not seeing at this point in the season Tyler Wade instead of Shane Robinson coming up and taking that spot because there's more upside there. Bottom line, more upside.
Well, we're going to see Tyler Wade, but
now we are.
It's going to be because Didi's probably going on the DL. They haven't announced anything yet, but he left on Sunday with a deep heel bruise. If you look at the play, like as we were watching the play, heel bruise is the last thing I would have thought that it was the injury that came out of that play and that collision at first base. But Boone said after the game, he's likely going to go on the DL. So probably going to see Tyler Wade. He's going to be up here playing some shortstop, playing some second. I think Glaber's going to get some time at shortstop as well.
And Torres, again, mm-hmm. You forgetting about Torres, who had another three hits yesterday, and all he does is, John Sterling does, says all he does is hit. All he does is hit. John Sterling actually said, because I was listening to the game on Sunday, I have never seen him do anything wrong in the field. Literally what he said. You can't tell me that John Sterling has actually seen it.
You remember when Ronald Torres got picked off in game two of the ALDS last year?
Yes, but that was not... Defensively in the field is what he was referring to.
Oh, defensively in the
right,
field.
Right.
Gotcha. Okay, and so why don't John we put Sterling him in right field?
Sterling has a selective memory.
Let's put the 5'2" guy in right field. He could do better than Shane Robinson.
Who also is 5'2", by the way. I mean, but I don't understand. Like, why is Tyler Wade not the guy to go out there? Why is Shane Robinson? Because he's a quote, natural outfielder. He's not even a great outfielder. I've seen him play... a few balls terribly wrong. A line drive going over his head a few weeks ago significantly stands out in my head. Like I don't think he's a plus defender. So why not have the more athletic guy with the upside that's got a little bit of youthful exuberance that actually looks like a major leaguer in the game instead of Shane Robinson? I don't understand that.
You have to imagine every day Shane Robinson packs a suitcase on his way to the ballpark. Like this has got to be my last day in the majors, right?
I mean, he's playing with house money, so I think he's just living in the same T-shirt. I don't even think he's packing bags at this point.
He's living out of the clubhouse.
Yeah, just, you know, rotate the underwear, flip it inside out. Let's just go.
All right, I want to give two stats comparing Andujar. Not comparing them, but just a stat on Andujar and a stat on Gleyber Torres. So, awesome Andujar stat. As of yesterday, he's driven in a runner from third base with less than two outs in 16 of 22 opportunities, which is 72%. Which is well above the league average of 50%. And he now leads all rookies in home runs, RBIs, and doubles. And he leads the American League rookies in hits and runs scored. So I think at this point, very easy, clear path to Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, the thing is though, if Torres can get back to form and start, and I totally expect him to get back to form. I think he's definitely in a bad slump at this point, but there's been signs this weekend. He had a pretty good series, and there's signs of him coming out of it. If Gleyber Torres could put together a 2 week span of being red hot like we've seen in the past, like this race is right back neck and neck. It's not that far off right now. For you look at the numbers, and yeah, Andujar has been phenomenal. I mean, just like unbelievably good, especially since the All-Star break. He's been so good. And I think he's really grown a lot, which is, you know, so important for the Yankee franchise and the brass to see how he's progressed offensively. You know, we're not seeing the defensive stuff, but I've always thought that, like, defense, you're really not going to get much better until the offseason at that point. But whereas offense, you can kind of make in-season adjustments a little bit more easily. But I think we're, you know, a good hot streak from Gleyber Torres for this thing being neck and neck again.
And I think maybe we're seeing him start to come out of it. 6 hits in his last 4 games. This is a stat from ESPN that on inner half pitches, Gleyber in the first, before July 1st, had a 1.098 OPS on inside pitches. So he was mashing that inside pitch. And since then, he's only OPS of 562. So you could clearly see where his struggles are coming from. Pitchers are attacking him inside. He's not able to turn on the ball. Maybe the hip injury is not fully healthy. Maybe he doesn't have full strength, mobility. Who knows what it is? Could just be rust. But that is, I think, some of the roots of his struggles since he came off the DL.
I like in the notes how you wrote in here how he may be snapping out of it, because that's the key word for Judge in his hitting coach, right? The snap effect, getting that snap, making sure that the hips are coming through and loading early and then snapping in when the ball is there so that they can have the barrel of the bat. And I think that could be something to it. Like when you're looking at the hips, you know, coming back from a hip injury, you're probably going to have some tightness. You know, getting back to the range of motion, the flexibility in the hips can absolutely, you know, affect you. Turning over on that inside pitch, again, more of that could be more scouting too. He might be getting more inside pitches that are, potentially there is more tape on him now. So, you know, maybe pitchers are seeing something a little bit to exploit. So there's adjustments that have to be made. But I do think the hip injury could absolutely play into it. It makes sense for that type of struggle. But, you know, now we're seeing maybe more range of motion. He's getting a little bit back into baseball shape, and he's starting to hit the ball. So his confidence is certainly getting a little bit better. But he's one of those guys in the post-game interviews who's definitely very hard on himself and knows that he talks about how he expects better and should be better. And I love that. That's what you want to hear. You want to hear that from a young guy. And he's saying all the right things at the same time.
We saw some of the lack of hustle plays from Gleyber, some of the loss of concentration plays. Do you think maybe he let his struggles at the plate bleed into the field, and that's why we saw some of that stuff?
Probably. I mean, I'm sure that plays into it a little bit, but we also saw that early when he was doing well, too. I think some of that is just...
We never saw lack of hustle, though.
Yeah, the lack of hustle thing is... I think sometimes he gets caught deer in headlights looking at some certain plays. I don't think it's like an internal lack of hustle, because I think that kid hustles all the time when he's, you know, in the game, like mentally in the game. I don't think there's ever really a lack of hustle in him. He just doesn't come across to me as that type of guy. But I think there's a focus thing, you know, a youthful focus issue occasionally where his mind drifts and is not always as sharp as it should be in game or in situation. So I think that's, you know, the mental maturity will definitely come with the in-game stuff. I think that's more to it than really a lack of quote hustle.
You think you saw something shiny in the stands or whatever?
Yeah, something, or, you know, counting the dandelions, you know, the Little League World Series is out there. So you've seen those, some of those kids, you know, throw dirt bombs in the right field.
Glove on the hat, just picking dandelions out there.
Yeah.
Weird week for the Yankees. They have Monday and Thursday off. They play Miami in Miami, 2 games. Derek Jeter's current Miami Marlins, Giancarlo Stanton's old Miami Marlins. Stanton's probably going to play right field. They said he's going to play right field at least one of the games. His legs look fine. They had him steal a base on Sunday. Yeah. So I could really see them playing 2 games. You know he wants to play. It's in Miami. He's going back.
Certainly.
It's going to be the regular 3,000 Marlins fans plus 40,000 Yankee fans there.
Right. Yeah, no, Stanton definitely wants to play. We saw him this weekend, too, tag up on a ball from second to third. So he's been running a lot more, I think, and showing that he can do it. But, you know, they're still going to be careful with him, and I think they absolutely need to be, because and don't let this whole Miami thing, you know, force them into a bad decision just because it's, you know, his old team. If they think that, you know, there could be a potential of reaggravation with him playing the field, or if they see anything, I really hope that they hold him back, because that would be a devastating loss to this team right now. The way that they're going, and they've been winning games. We're seeing this team win games right now, and they looked a lot better in the Toronto series. The offense looked a ton better. So we're starting to build, I think, a little bit of momentum offensively, and it would be a devastating loss if Stanton were to, you know, re-aggravate that hamstring and go down for, you know, whatever period of time. Any period of time would be demoralizing, I think.
Yeah, because even though they have two off days this week, after that they have a long stretch of games, including a doubleheader against Baltimore. Hopefully, knock on wood, the last doubleheader of the season. One of those makeup games against Baltimore over the weekend, and then a long stretch of games. So you cannot take another injury.
No. And let me tell you one thing you cannot also do. If you're looking to hire somebody, you can't go around and waste your time going on all sorts of job boards. Hiring used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stack of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Bronx. The ZipRecruiter, it sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. It's super effective. 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within one day. That's 80% within one day. That's a crazy statistic. I know we all love stats, especially you stat metric guys. The with results like that, there's no wonder that ZipRecruiter is the highest rated hiring site in America. And right now, if you're a listener to the Bronx Pinstripes show, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive website address, which is ZipRecruiter.com/Bronx. Go there to try for free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Bronx. B-R-O-N-X. ZipRecruiter.com/Bronx. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire.
Okay, let's get to mailbags. The first one is from Jason at JasonA525 on Twitter. Does Larry Rothschild need to go? The pitching this year has mostly been bad and is regressing. Couple stats for you. Overall, the Yankees Major League Baseball ranks for pitching in 2018. Fifth in team ERA. 13th in starter ERA. Starter inning pitched is 19th, which is bad. Reliever ERA is 3rd, which is great. Reliever inning pitch 12th, which I was actually surprised about that it wasn't more.
Yeah, you're saying the 19th rank of starter innings pitches is not good. That's not a good number to be.
19 out of 30 is bottom third.
Not so good there. Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely fair to look at Larry Rothschild and say, you know, are you doing your job to the best of your ability? Are you making any kind of impact on this team? And I think it goes beyond just being the pitching coach. Like, I think there's a fundamental change of the way that Larry Rothschild likes to do things. And you know, the Yankees over the past couple of years with the, you know, the amount of breaking balls that they're throwing, it's definitely off of the norm. You see more fastballs, I think, throughout the league. And you know, Rothschild throws a high percentage of breaking stuff. So not only are you supposed to be out there, you know, coaching and making sure that you see any flaws or help guys with mechanics and do all the things that a coach does, but you're also, you know, you're changing game plans as well to what guys maybe aren't used to and just changing some things around. And if that's not working, then it really comes hard down on you, I think. You know, if you're changing what they're doing and they're not doing well, then I think we're starting to look at you and say, well, what you're doing, what you're mandating them do is not working. That's on you. You should be looking at what these guys do and what they do best and exploiting that and making sure that they're going out there and being their best pitcher, not so much your agenda. And I think that that's absolutely fair at this point. I think that because he's also a carryover into the new organization, he's certainly going to be on there.
The only main coach they kept was Rothschild.
And the bullpen. Yeah, bullpen coach. We had. So there are a couple, but yes, in the dugout, that's the guy. And so you got to look at him, no doubt.
And in the second half, the Yankees have a 4.5 team ERA, which is a full run higher than their first half team ERA.
And you know, not that I'm saying he is to blame for Sonny Gray, because he's not. I don't think he is. But they you know, one of the things was he's throwing more breaking balls. He's kind of gotten off his game. Who was it, Brian Kenny or someone was talking to us about the amount of pitches that he's thrown.
I think it was Petriello.
It was Petriello, that's right. And talking about the, you know, he hasn't thrown as many fastballs. He's not working as much off his fastball, and that's very different for Sonny Gray. You know, him working off of the curveball is a different thing for him. And yeah, I think Rothschild, if he's the one who's, you know, mandated that and changed the game, then there's absolutely some blame there. You gotta put it. He's the pitching coach. The pitching is not performing. You gotta look at the pitching coach and you know, see what he's doing and audit his job.
So, and also,
yeah, it's fair. Totally.
Sonny Gray does not seem mentally tough to deal with those kind of changes
Right.
So I think Rothschild and the coaches need to realize what kind of personality they have, what kind of player they have.
No doubt.
And maybe make some of those changes to some guys that can handle it and be a little bit lighter with some other guys.
Yeah, and I think the pivots need to be quicker. Like, if we're seeing something not work, and I guess there's two ways to look at this. You want to make sure you give a game plan its fair shake, and you know you can't just adjust after one start or even two starts. But if you're seeing, you know, 3 and 4 and 5 starts not working out the way that you want to, you're not seeing the production that you want. You're not seeing the execution of the pitches or the game plan that you're looking for. Then you got to pivot. You got to be a quicker pivot and do something, you know, at least change it up to things, if for no other reason to change up what you're doing and try to get back to a success, you know, looking at what he's done in the past as success. And, you know, we saw some limited success from Sonny Gray when he started doing the two pitches and you know, working off of that two seamer. But again, I absolutely think there is, some blame to go on Rothschild, but Sonny Gray certainly is mentally weak.
No, we're not letting Sonny Gray off the hook. Next question is from Last Man Stanton at T Medinsky 10 on Twitter. Do you think the Yankees should keep Gardner next year or let Frazier take over?
Yeah, I mean, it's impossible to say let Frazier take over at this point because, you know, we don't know what his health is going to be like. I mean, this guy is definitely battling back, and battling's even a hard word because he can't really do much. He's it's not like you can rehab a head injury. You have to wait, and you have to wait for things to be right. And there's no timetable on that. There's no rehab schedule. There's nothing really that you can do besides wait to see when you feel better. And unfortunately, when you're making plans into the future and you have a guy like that has an injury like this that doesn't, you know, have anything that you can circle as a date of returning or, you know, when it will come back, if it will come back, it's hard to make future plans based around a guy like that, you know, with the given circumstances. So I think if the season ended today and the contract was up tomorrow, they would re-sign Gardner.
Yeah, it's a $12.5 million option, $2 million buyout. I agree. I think they're going to pick it up unless something drastically changes over the next month. But also for Frazier, this is it's a totally lost season for him. And what it also has done is it's killed his trade value because a team doesn't want to trade for a player that might have concussion problems. It sucks for Frazier. It sucks that he has not been able to... He's felt helpless. He has talked about how he feels helpless because it's not a hamstring injury. You rehab it, you come back. It's a head injury. You can't really do anything. So his trade value is low. So also Brian Cashman's not going to move him in the offseason because you're going to get 50 cents on the dollar you would normally get.
Right. And you know, I think teams would absolutely want to come in and trade for a guy like Clint Frazier and roll the dice on that. But like you said, you're going to get 50 cents on the dollar. So they're coming in with a guy that just has unknown circumstances and what the future is going to look like. So you're certainly not going to get what he would deserve as a player because he's a very good player and he's proved that he could do it in the major leagues. And, you know, we talked about earlier about how the Yankees are you know, haven't gone out and gotten an outfielder. You know, I don't know if some of this is just like in obviously not immediately because he would have to rehab and he would have to get some at-bats in minor leagues and stuff. It's just such a shame because, you know, this was going to be a golden opportunity for Clint Frazier to really show what he could do on the major league level. And it's just absolutely unfortunate that this injury and this head thing has lingered on as long as it has. So I definitely feel for him as a person, but also as a baseball player, because you know it's really, really, really shitty when you see the opportunity wide open in front of your face and you just can't grab it. You can't do anything to do it, and it sucks.
Okay, final question is from Fire Boone at Joseph_P7. Do you think Sale's shoulder will allow the Yankees to get back in the division race?
I mean, it doesn't hurt. It certainly helps, I think. You know, there's going to be a lot more onus on the pitching staff that is not very deep, in Boston. We've talked about in the past about how their minor leagues are not deep. They're not like a fruitful farm system, minor league system like the Yankees have. Not that they have that on the pitching side right now anyway. But so, absolutely. When you lose a guy like Chris Sale, it impacts you. Every fifth day when he goes out there, Chris Sale will not be there. It'll be some other guy that's a lot more hittable, and there's a much higher percentage chance of them losing that game. So, yes.
But I think what it's going to do... So, they probably did not leave Sale on the DL long enough the first time around because he was on this for a couple weeks ago with the same issue. And he came back and clearly still feeling some shoulder problems. If he is not fully healthy and dominant in the playoffs, then that totally changes the Red Sox season outlook in the playoffs. And in a short five-game series in the ALDS, which is what the Yankees are probably going to have to play the Red Sox in, well, then that becomes a totally different animal. And you don't nearly worry as much if you're facing Porcello and then David Price in those first two games instead of Chris Sale and then Porcello.
Yeah, that's true for sure. Because when you take Porcello out of the equation, it's definitely better for the opposing team. That being said, Porcello's had another rebound year. It's like this guy is like every other year he does things that you don't expect, whether it's do well or do really bad. But he's definitely bounced back and he's pitched really well against the Yankees. I mean, they made him look like freaking Cy Young his last at bat or his last outing when he threw 80 some pitches, complete game. Like it was ridiculous. So the Yankees have not had success against them, and then. They have had success against Price, obviously, but he pitched much better in his last outing against the Yankees. So I think they have guys that right now that are going well that can still, you know, hold them up and they can sustain it. But it's definitely something that's going to affect their team. You know, if this offense starts to struggle at all, and we just haven't seen that happen yet, it has not happened, and everybody keeps waiting and waiting and waiting. I'm waiting and waiting and waiting, and I still think at some point it's going to happen. I don't know how long it's going to sustain, but you know, when you have a guy like Chris Sale out, you know that guy's not there to stop any bleeding. So, it's definitely an impactful DL stint for sure. And what was it? Dead arm last time you went on, and now they're saying
it was just shoulder both times.
Yeah, but they were talking about. I thought it was more fatigue. That was more the narrative of the, because it was such a quick stint that they were talking more about fatigue. It seems like now it's a little bit worse.
Yeah, and maybe it's a good thing that the Red Sox have not gone through one of those struggles, and then it's going to come in the worst time for them, which is end of September, early October.
That's what we all want, right? We all want disaster to happen. we want like a train wreck for them to lose like 15 games in a row. I mean, nothing could be better.
All right, guys, thank you for submitting mailbag questions. If you want to do so, you can do it at bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. That is where you can submit the form and send us an email, or you can do it in the Facebook group, The Bronx Pinstripe Show, and tweet us at Yankees Podcast. Scott, anything else?
Yeah, we don't have voicemails this time because there were a few of them and some of the connections were terrible, so we're not putting them up. Make sure you guys call in. We need you guys to bring the heat. I feel like in the past couple weeks, it's been a little complacent on the caller side. You know, when we're bringing the fire, we need you guys to bring the fire because it brings such a good element to these Monday shows. So put this phone number in your phone whenever you feel any emotion. I don't care what it is, good, bad, indifferent. Call the voicemail line and give us your best 15 to 30 seconds, 646-480-0342. Put it in your phone on speed dial. Call it whenever you feel like you need to say something so that we can get some fire hot takes at the end of these Monday shows from you guys. Because, you know, I love hearing them, and I know everybody who listens looks forward to these voicemails.
Sounds good. We will talk to you on Thursday.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.